Well, I appreciate the privilege of being here. Appreciate each one of you making it today. I certainly want to be one that stands on a solid rock, as that song said, that they sing. And this morning, I'd like for us to examine something a little, spend a little time looking at something that I'm sure we'd all like to have more of. And that's a word I'm going to write on the board up here. Wonder how many of us could use a little more happiness. I thinking about this, looking at a dictionary definition. I have to read that to you. I doubt anybody here would like to say I'd just as soon be less happy than I am right now. I think you'd like to be more happy. And I don't know where you feel like you are on your level of happiness, but I'd like to dig into it a little bit. Sometimes we get this perspective that we can't be happy where we're at. Might be a physical location. It might be a place in life. It might be just a mental state that we're in. We just don't feel like we can be happy. Or we might say, I'm not happy. We've heard the expression, nobody's happy until whatever, mama's happy or daddy's happy. You know, it's just, happiness seems to be somewhat of an elusive thing. So I'd like to look at start out maybe with a definition that I got from the dictionary. It says the agreeable sensations which spring from the enjoyment of good, the state of a being in which his desires are gratified, by the enjoyment of pleasure without pain, felicity, which means great happiness. But happiness usually expresses less than felicity, and felicity less than bliss. So it's happiness, felicity, and bliss. I mean, that's kind of like, so happiness is kind of like second or third place to bliss in this dictionary definition. Happiness is comparative. To a person distressed with pain, relief from that pain affords happiness. All right? In other cases, we give the name happiness to positive pleasures or an excitement of agreeable sensation. Happiness, therefore, admits to indefinite degrees of increase in enjoyment. Indefinite degrees of increase and enjoyment or gratification of desires. Perfect happiness. This is, I'm reading this all from the dictionary. Perfect happiness or pleasure unalloyed with pain is not attainable in this life. That's what I got out of the dictionary. So I was thinking about us driving down the road in comparison to happiness. And I would venture that all of us here today have an automobile that you can get out on the interstate and set the cruise at the maximum speed, allowable speed, and drive all day long. Is that a true statement? I'm old enough to remember vehicles that you just didn't do that with. You didn't get out here and drive 70 miles an hour or 75 or, I don't know, Brother Rob, is some of the interstates 80 or 85 now or something? You know, I think South Dakota or someplace up there, there might be even some stretches of road that just says be safe. You can drive as fast as you want to. You know, I remember vehicles that you just didn't go out there and set the cruise on 80 and drive all day long. And I remember those that felt like if you was driving 50 or 60, now that was fast people that felt that way. But have you ever noticed that if you're going a long distance and you set the cruise, if the speed limit says 75 and you set yours at 75, and after about 2 or 3 hours of that, you kind of wish, man, I'd like to go 10 or 15 miles an hour faster, and we're not there yet. You know, happiness is kind of like that. You can be going along and having things better than your parents had it. And you can have things better than a lot of other people in life. And when you first got it, you thought, boy, this is happiness. But you can kind of, it starts feeling like an old shoe after a while, and you wish you could have more. That's one of the most outstanding things that I think that is. It said in the dictionary definition that happiness is comparative. Compared to what? Compared to what I've got right now. Compared to what I used to have. Compared to what I wished I had. And perfect happiness, where there is no disappointment, no pain, nothing that crosses my path at all. Folks, we're not going to get that here. It's just not going to happen. So when somebody comes along, as a parent, you know, there's been times when our children feel like that the sky's falling and things are just all caving in on them. And I don't know if you younger parents have said this or not, but I remember my mother telling me, and I passed that wisdom on to my children, be happy. You just tell them sometimes. It's time for you to be happy. You know, quit your fussing, quit your crying, quit, you know, you got your lip stuck out, just quit it. It's time to be happy. You know, we have to make a conscious decision to choose the things that'll make us happy. And we have to realize that there's some things, there's some contingencies on happiness. And sometimes it helps us to stop and think about where we've been and where we've come from. And if we feel like we're not happy, maybe it'd be good for us to do a little reality check and just think about those that wish they had it as good as we've got it. You know, there's folks out there that would trade places with us in a heartbeat, and they probably find something to smile about too. So I'd like to read a few scriptures. Since we're at service and all, and not just be a motivational thing, let's go to Deuteronomy, the 33rd chapter. And I want us to notice what was happening here in this chapter. In Deuteronomy's chapter 33, in the first verse it says, "And this is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death." And I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I did earlier by myself. And I want to tell y'all that if you read this chapter, what you'll find is Moses went down tribe by tribe and pronounced a blessing on every tribe of all 12 tribes of Israel. So I'd like to skip down to the last verse of the chapter, and it's verse 29. He says, "Happy are thou, O Israel." So if someone pronounces a blessing on you, don't you anticipate being happy? I would think, you know, if your parent says, I want to bless you with something. We don't use that word so much, but there was an age, and maybe even cultures today, where the parents bless their children verbally and with maybe monetary goods and maybe special privileges or assets. So we'll bless our children with this, bless our descendants, or bless your grandchildren, or what. Have you ever blessed your grandchildren, those of us that's older, with something that you were just sure it would make them happy, and you blessed them with something, and in a short period of time you found out they still weren't happy? There was something else that just didn't quite go right? Well, here he says, "Happy art thou, O Israel. Who is like unto thee? I've pronounced a blessing on every one of you that are every one of the tribes." He says, "Who is like unto thee, O people, saved by the Lord?" They were God's chosen people of the Old Testament age. He said, "The shield of thy help," the Lord is a shield for you. There's protection there. He says, "And who is the sword of thy excellency? And thine enemies should be found liars unto thee." Wouldn't that make some people happy? He says, "And thou shalt tread upon their high places." The places that you walk on with your feet, literally, is the places they used to worship. That's how much higher, that's how much more blessed that you are. Moses pronounced this on them. This is almost the last of the book of Deuteronomy. It's the last book that we have that Moses wrote, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. And Moses was telling the people here, "I've blessed each one of you. You're in a position to be happy." There's times that as parents you may tell your child, there's nothing, you don't have anything really to cry about. Maybe they're unhappy and they're crying and they're dissatisfied about something, but we may tell them as a parent, you don't really have a good reason to cry. You need to be happy. You need to put a smile on your face. So, blessing should make us all happy, shouldn't it? But you know what we'll find? We'll find if we have a blessing and we're able, so to speak, to walk upon the things that someone else would worship, we have things maybe better. How many of us had to go out and pull up a bucket of water this morning so we could brush our teeth or have something to drink? I didn't. I turned the valve on and had water run. I could have let it run. It could still be running. I'm pretty sure I shut it off. But I didn't have to go let a bucket down in a well. I didn't have to go outside this morning. When I got up, I went outside because I wanted to. There's a lot of blessings that we have. There was food in my refrigerator this morning. I didn't have to saddle up a horse to get here. I didn't have to feed. I took some scraps out to the dog, and that's like a hobby or a pastime. I kind of need a dog. It keeps the coons out of the corn. But, you know, it's not like I'm dependent on them. We're blessed. So what, you know, the Lord could look down at me today and say, "You need to be happy." Could he say that to you? I think he probably could to all of us. We have a lot of goods. We have a lot of blessings. And yet, it's kind of like us setting a cruise at 60 and wishing we could go 70. Or driving along at 70 for a while. And, you know, if I could only drive 100 miles an hour, think how much time that would save. You know, if the law enforcement only knew how good a driver I am and would let me drive that fast. That, you know, you could drive, if you drove 100, you'd be wanting to go 125. You know, we could have everything so good and we want it more. We want it better. So what if we said to one another, you just need to be happy. You need to make a decision to be happy. You need to realize you've got some things that others might give their eye tooth for. That's an old expression. You know, we can't expect to be happy just because someone blessed us. Did the Israelites stay in a position of being able to walk on the high places of their enemies? They didn't. They could have. They could have. They could have been, the world could have been different today if the Israelites would have been different. You know, we can have a different life if we'll count our blessings and be happy. But we've got a choice. We can decide, I'm just not going, it's not going fast enough. You know, this is old hat, and I need something new. Let's turn to another verse over in Psalms 144. I'm sorry. Let's go to Psalms 144. And I'd like to look beginning in verse 11. I believe it is. 144 and 11 of Psalms. It says, rid me and deliver me from the hand of strange children whose mouth speaketh vanity and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood. You know, there's some people that get on our nerves and there's some people that just bother us and we want to be delivered from that. And we think if so-and-so would be out of our life, we could be happy. He says that our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, that our daughters may be as cornerstones polished after the similitude of a palace, that our garners may be full. He's talking about his barns and storehouses. He said, affording all manner of store, that our sheep may bring forth thousands and ten thousands in our street, that our oxen may be strong to labor, that there be no breaking in or going out, that there be no complaining in our streets. What's he asking for? Happiness. If I could have all of this, I could be happy. You know, you could say, you know, if I just had a new car, if I had a new house, if all of my children would behave, or if my neighbor would just stay out of my yard, I could be happy. But I can't because they won't. And we could ask for all of these things, no complaining in the street. But listen what he says in verse 15. Happy is that people that is in such a case. Yea, happy is that people whose God is the Lord. So, yeah, he says, the people that have all those things, they're going to be happy. He says, happy is that people that is in such a case. You know, if everything just falls in your lap, that there's a level of happiness that comes with that. You know, I opened the door and there was opportunity. And I just stepped right into opportunity after opportunity. And I've had such a happy life. You know, we'd all kind of like to be like that, wouldn't we? But sometimes when we open the door, we stump our toe and we hit our head on the door facing. And it doesn't seem like so much of an opportunity. But he said here, not only the people that have those things, like their oxen are strong and their sheep bring forth thousands and ten thousands and they're delivered from the troublesome people and all of that. It's not just that. He says, yay, happy is that people whose God is the Lord. So whose God is not just happiness, but whose God is the Lord, the Creator, a Heavenly Father. So how does this figure in? Let's go to Job, the 5th chapter. In Job chapter 5, he says here in verse 7, I'm sorry, 17. He says, "Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth." Does that make any sense? "Happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty." So what's chastening and correcting got to do with happiness? It sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Sounds like something that's opposite. How does God correcting us make us happy? You know, it's a proven fact that when a parent gives structured environment to a child, they like it. They blossom. They're more apt to be happy if they have a parent that sets boundaries for them than they are just being able to do whatever they want to. There's statistics out there to prove it. I don't have any with me today to share with you, but a God happy is what? Is that people, happy is the man that God correcteth. You know, there's something that's stabilizing about correction. There's something that's reassuring about knowing that somebody cares enough that they told me. I don't think that'd be a good thing to do. Lord, help us to be willing to recognize when there's correction that cometh, when there's chastening that comes. I don't even care how you dress it up. Chastening doesn't look good on the surface. You can't put enough fancy stuff on the word chastening to say, yes, I want some of that. All of us would initially rather avoid chastening. But you know, when we have been chastened, when we have been corrected, when we have been disciplined, and we see the result of that, many times it resets our happiness button. You know, yesterday Rodney and I was doing some things with a table saw, and we probably should have had a different blade in it because it was kind of a finished cut blade, and we were ripping a 2x12 with it on a 45. So it was slow going. And my table saw that I was using, Rodney wondered why it did it because his didn't do that. Well, mine doesn't have as much power as his does. And we were pushing it through there nice and slow, and it stalled out. And it's got this feature when it pulls down so far, it just kind of stops. And you got to push the button and reset it. Sometimes that's the way our happiness is. We're going along in life and maybe we're starting to get off track a little bit. And we have a little chastening. We have a little discipline, a little correction that coming from the Lord. It might come from a friend, as we heard in our Sunday school lesson this morning. A friend that comes along and says, "Brother, I don't think I'd do that if I was you." And we think, well, I didn't really need them to tell me that. I was already kind of feeling kind of bad about it, you know. And they say, I just don't think that'd be good for you. And we kind of, you know, it's chastening. It don't feel very good. And after we come back, we realize, you know, if we listen and take heed to the correction and the chastening of the Lord especially, but even from a friend that really has our best interests in mind, from our parents, many times it's kind of like resetting that thing, and here we go again. we reset our table saw, and we was able to cut some more. We made a lot of sawdust with that thing. And, you know, happiness is something, if you think you're going to get happy by getting stuff, you're setting yourself up for disaster. All right? So let's go, maybe Psalms 146 and verse 5. He says here, I will speak of the, I'm sorry, I was in the wrong chapter. Happy is he that hath the God of Jacob for his help, whose hope is in the Lord his God. Now, many times, it's our own ideas that we think will make us happy, right? We think if we could just attain to whatever it is because it's something we've thought of, that's going to make us happy. But notice what he said here. Happy is he that hath the God of Jacob for his help, whose hope is in the Lord his God. Have you ever thought that you could be happy hoping in someone else's benefit? Or their plan? Have you ever thought that might make you happy? You know, there's a missing ingredient today in our world, in relationships, in marriages. Did you know that if you'll put your spouse's happiness above your happiness, you know that ultimately that'll reset your happiness button? Ultimately, that'll bring more happiness in your life. He says, whose hope is in the Lord his God, not his hope is in his ambitions and goals. It's in the Lord. So where is our happiness? Is our hope in the Lord? Or is our hope in something else? It may be that that's the reason we struggle so much, feeling happy. In Psalms 37 and 4, he says, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he'll do what? Give thee the desires of thine heart. But happiness, many times, if not always, is contingent on us contributing and participating and even giving of ourselves. He says here, delight thyself also in the Lord. How do you delight yourself in something that you don't like? You know, if you don't like to be here this morning, you wouldn't have come. I hope that you sincerely like to be here. And if we like to be here, you know, you can get something. The Lord will see that you get something. Even in my ineptness, the Lord can still minister to your heart and your soul. He says, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he'll give thee the desires of thine heart. What is your ultimate desire? To be fulfilled? To be happy? Isn't that what you're here for in life? How do you get there? Just by raking in more and more and more? Or is it by having our hope in the Lord? By giving of ourself for the cause of others? Maybe our spouse. Maybe our family. Let's turn to Proverbs 29, common verse. You've heard me read this many times. Proverbs 29 and verse 18. He says here, where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Here's another, almost sounds like contradictory situation. He that keepeth the law, it says, happy is he. How would that bring happiness? You know, if you are keeping the law of God in your heart and in your life, did you know that it will produce happiness? You will see good where you didn't see good before. You know that you will realize the benefits of being in conformity to God's law if you really sincerely keep it. If you really apply yourself to know and to understand God's plan for you and for mankind, you know that it'll bring happiness. But if we are always wrestling and thinking about ways to avoid being in conformity or being in compliance with God's law, if we're always looking for a way out, you know you won't be happy either. You'll always be struggling with, I'm just not happy. I just see everything is negative. You'll paint everything with something gray, almost black. It'll be dingy and dusty and dirty, and maybe not literally, but you see how when we keep the law of God, not only does it bring happiness, but it gives you a vision. Now that I have glasses, I find that they gradually get dirty, and because I'm, when I can see stuff off at the distance, but I can't see the close thing, I guess I'm farsighted, is that right? So, anyway, I take my glasses off, I can't read anything. That means that when I take my glasses off and look at them, I can't tell they're dirty. All right? And if you're the other way around, if you take your glasses off and can read, and you got to put your glasses on to read the road signs, that's different than me, okay? But if you do that, you can look at my glasses and say, Brother Danny, your glasses are dirty. And I take them off and say, they look pretty good to me. But this is what I find. If I work in a dusty environment, like yesterday, Rodney and I was making sawdust, and I got a lot of sawdust on my glasses, I get to where I can't see very good. But when I clean them up, when I get in conformity with God's law, what happened to my vision? It got a lot better. Rodney says, here, let me have your glasses one time. He cleaned my glasses off, and I could see a lot better. I just thought the lights were getting dim. You know, that's what will happen to us. We'll think the lights are getting dim. And we'll say, I'm not happy anymore. Why aren't you happy? It's because you're always struggling to be pleasing to the Lord. You just don't want to anymore. And if you don't want to, you're probably not going to do it. Just like I didn't call any of you this morning and say, service is at 9:30. Worship service at 10:30. Are you on the way yet? I didn't do that to any of you. You came because you wanted to. Or because you felt you ought to. I don't know. I hope it's because you wanted to. You know, if we will put ourselves in a place to keep the law of God, there will be happiness. And not only happiness, there will be vision. We'll be able to see clearly what really matters in life. I'd like to end And James, well, let's go to 1 Peter instead. 1 Peter, the 4th chapter. And notice a few verses over here. 1 Peter chapter 4, begin reading in verse 12. He says, Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. You know, we always feel taken aback when difficulty comes our way. But we can cultivate that to the point that anytime something comes against our happiness, till we feel like we're just overwhelmed. I don't know how I'm going to survive, and it might be a hangnail, so to speak. And it's because we've cultivated this little ripple in our happiness meter. He says, don't think it strange when fiery trials. I think he was talking about something more than a hangnail. I think he was talking about a serious situation. He says, think it not strange when fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice. What? Rejoice. Inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. You know, I'm a man, and I can relate to things as I think men do more apt to. But I've pushed through some pretty disgusting things so I can enjoy the benefit on the other side. I've been in the mud, I've been in the grease, I've been in the dirt, I've been in the things that were dangerous, been on the top of a ladder and down in a hole and pushed and strained and sweated and all of that, and I did it all not because I just liked doing things that was dangerous, and I mean, people might think I did, but you know, I remember going in and taking showers and realizing I had a cuckle burr in my hair, and you look down in the shower and it was so dirty that you thought you need to start all over and do it again. I did it all. Why? Because I wanted an end result. And he says here, don't think it's strange, but rejoice. Inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. You know, this is why we have to realize our happiness button has to be reset. And sometimes it's fiery trials that reset our happiness button. You know, if you went through a real difficult place, and you come out of it, you're much more apt to come to Wednesday night with a testimony than you are if everything's just been going okay. If you woke up feeling good every morning and your day just clicked along and everybody smiled and said yes and thank you and would you like a little more and all of that, all week long you come to Wednesday night, you think, well, I don't guess I've got anything to be thankful for. And the reality is that you've had it so good you don't know any different. You've been so happy you didn't know, you couldn't stand it, so to speak. And you just never, it just didn't dawn on you that it's been so good. So we have to have a reset. We have to have some disappointments. We have to have some trials. And people say, boy, they make you dress like that down at your church? Well, no, you have to stop and think about it a little bit. And then you come in on Wednesday night and you can testify and say, I'm thankful for a little bit of my happiness reset. I got something to be happy for. Then he said in verse 14, if you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you on their part, but he is evil spoken of, but on your part he's glorified. Why is it? Well, what's he talking about here? He's talking about us being happy or anticipating being happy because of the very thing somebody is trying to make us feel bad about. He says, but let none of you suffer as a murderer or as a thief or an evildoer or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet, if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on his behalf. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end of them that obey not the gospel of God? We're not very typically very happy when we've been reproached, are we? Ever had somebody tell you you're doing that all wrong? That'll never work. Maybe they just said, I don't like you. Maybe they said, what you're doing, God won't bless anyway. Those hurt. And right then we don't feel very happy. We might be reproached for our hair, our dress, our faithfulness in the marriage relationship. We might be reproached by the size of our family, for the entertainment that we avoid. We might be reproached for a lot of things, just our lifestyle in general. But I want to ask us, does our pursuit of happiness include avoiding being reproached for the name of Christ? Because what's he teaching here? He says, if you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye. That's what he said. Are you happy when you're reproached? I'd say at the time, no. None of us feel happy. Are we happy that we can be a servant of the Lord? Are we happy to be on God's side? I would hope to think that we'd all say, yes, I'm happy to be on God's side. You know what happens if we're only happy when nothing goes wrong? If we're only happy when nobody says anything negative to us or about us? If we feel like all our happiness has evaporated because things are not going our way, you know what's going to happen? We're just going to constantly pursue avoiding any conflict. And if we pursue avoiding conflict, you know where we're going to end up? Displeasing to the Lord. That's where we're going to end up. You know where we end up when we're displeasing to the Lord? That other place. It's not heaven. That's where we end up. So when somebody says, are you happy? Please don't start counting how many times you've been reproached and how many times you felt like things have not gone right. Just remember that all of those things are reset buttons for our happiness. All of those things are opportunities to say, you know, I've had a lot to be thankful for. I've had a lot of things that I should have just been happy. And I realize it could disappear. So I desire your prayers that I'll apply these things to my own heart, my own life. I know that I've got a lot of things to be happy for. And anytime the devil wants me to start thinking like you're not happy because they won't let you drive but 70 on the interstate. You're not happy because of whatever it is. You only have this much money. Nobody has said thank you to you a while. You could probably, it's been at least 24 hours since someone said thank you to you. I mean, you have all the reason in the world to not be happy. The devil will tell you those kind of things. You know, I've went to work for at least a whole week and nobody said good job. I used to work for a company that every once in a while the owner signed my paycheck. Some places don't do that, but the owner signed my paycheck. And every once in a while he would write on my check, good job. And it felt pretty good, but he didn't do that every week, you know. And if he didn't do it for 6 weeks or 7 weeks, it's like, well, I don't know. I thought this was as good as it was 2 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago or whatever. And he said, good job back then, but he didn't say it now. I wonder what's happening. You know, and we can say, well, I'm not happy anymore. I'm going to go find another job. I worked for that place for 16 years. You know, I've been endeavoring to live for the Lord for a long time. And by His grace and His strength, I'm going to be successful. And I want to learn how to count my happiness in the right way. You pray for me.